New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get two snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
Okay, welcome back to the Big E Sports Show at Yahoo Sports Radio, and we are gearing up for a very special interview. We're going to go behind the curtain and highlight the life story of one of the finest quarterbacks in NFL history. Johnny Unitas had a remarkable football career, holding the record for the most consecutive games with a touchdown pass for 52 years, and the NFL's MVP in 1959, 64, and 67. Johnny Unitas set the gold standard for quarterbacks to follow, and joining us now is his son, John Unitas Jr., who co-wrote the book Johnny U and Me, The Man Behind the Golden Arm, reveals just a compelling inside look at Johnny's life on and off the field. Good evening, John. It's wonderful to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Alyssa. I appreciate it very much being on with you.
Well, congratulations on an enlightening biography and just honoring your father on and off the field. I thought you and Edward did just a beautiful job illuminating the character and convictions of your father and a man that just meant so much to the game of football. You got to be really proud of this book.
I am. It took a long time to write. It's 3.5 years of a lot of hard work and sitting down with Edward and I and deciding how to put it together and how it might read and things we need to talk about. And I didn't really want it to be just an entirely football book. I wanted it to be a lot about my dad, how he was as a father, how he was as a player and a friend of other players. So it's a real, I'm very proud of the book, and it's just hopefully people will love reading it as well.
When you talk about Johnny Unitas, there's the public perception of him as an athlete, but how would you describe your father as a competitor in those early memories?
Well, I think my father was one of the toughest athletes out there. I mean, back then, these guys would be smoking cigarettes and drinking for all hours of night and come out and play football, even with the ingrown toenails and everything else.
Like, okay.
They're tough. They're competitive. They persevered. This is what they wanted to do. And even when football was over, they had a job outside of football. My father was a pile driver for Bethlehem Steel. So he was just a wonderful father. Was he a father with a halo over his head? No, not really. I don't think any of us are.
Uh-huh. But
he worked hard at it, we learned a lot from our father, and I had the pleasure of being with him as a child in training camp. I was a ball boy, and I slept on the top bunk, and he was on the bottom bunk, and Jimmy Orr and Raymond Berry were in the rooms next door. So I grew up real quick as a young man, being in training camp and coming home and learning how to cuss and looking at dirty magazines. My mom had a fit. But that's the way it was. That was the way it was back then.
Well, I'm glad you bring up the wide receiver from the Baltimore Colts, Raymond Berry, because I thought he summarized it best in the foreword. I mean, it gave a really great history lesson about your father, Johnny Unitas. I mean, he really was the combination of physical, mental, and he played with so much heart. I mean, he was someone that could not be intimidated. Where did that strength come from?
You know, I'm not sure. I think it was probably from his childhood. My father grew up without a father. His father died when he was 5. He was raised by his mom and his two sisters and brother, Leonard, Millie, and Shirley, and Helen, his mom, and they were tough. And he grew up during the Depression as well. I mean, it's again, I kind of highlight this and break apart some myths out there that my father grew up very poor. Well, he didn't. He just grew up during the Depression, and he worked hard. My uncle took over his father's coal business, and my father would be, shoveling coal for odd jobs with his brother Leonard, and he grew in a tough town of Pittsburgh, Mount Washington area, so again, I think it all stems from him, his childhood, his early childhood, and what he had to persevere through and what he went through, and I think he just carried on through his life. He wanted to be a football player. That's what he wrote in his yearbook, in high school yearbook, and that's what he ended up becoming, and he worked hard at it. It just didn't come easy for him. My father wasn't the greatest athletic specimen out there, but he worked hard at it. He knew the game real well, and him and Raymond together, the receiver and quarterback, they worked on those plays. They just didn't invent them. They stayed after practice every day and worked for hours till it got dark and did it the day after. So And we grew up with Raymond in Baltimore, and Raymond is a very dear friend of mine and serves on my advisory committee for the Johnny Unitas Gold Arm Educational Foundation and our Gold Arm Award as well. So we still visit with Raymond and Sally each year, and they're just wonderful folks. And I think the way the athletes were back then is totally different the way it is now. I mean, they're bigger, they're stronger now. But again, these guys were real true athletes. I don't think there was a lineman that was over maybe 250 back then. Now you got linebackers at 250. So, but it's just a different era, different game.
Right. Having a wonderful conversation with John Unitas Jr., the son of Johnny Unitas. He's the president of the Johnny Unitas Golden Arm Foundation. Of course, the new book that we are highlighting this evening at YSR, it is titled Johnny, You, and Me. And you guys have got to go out and get a copy of this. And I thought one of the goals from your book was really, as you were just talking about, dispelling the overblown rag-to-riches myth of Johnny's childhood in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. It is. I mean, you know, he worked hard. He didn't have a lot of money, but they weren't poor and they weren't scrounging back then. And I just, again, what I really wanted to do with this book is really, you know, show people that my father was really a human being, humanizing him. You know, everybody puts him on a pedestal, and rightfully so. That's where he belongs when it comes to football. But he's a regular guy, and he treats people with respect, and they look at you in the eye and shake your hand, and would never refuse an autograph, never, ever. And he recognized that if it wasn't for these people asking for his autograph and watching him play, he wouldn't have been as successful as he was.
Johnny Unitas, of course, had an 18-year professional career that produced two championship game victories in 58 and 59, Super Bowl win in 1970. And, of course, as we've been talking about, we all know, considered the finest quarterback to have ever played the game. Were there some things, some nuggets in there that you definitely wanted to share that perhaps that we didn't know about your father as a player?
Well, I want everybody to go out and buy the book. I think they're going to enjoy the read. It's 300 and some pages, but I think in there they're going to be surprised at what they hear. There's people that my father didn't really care for in the football world, and that's in there.
Uh-huh.
And I just think people will enjoy reading something other than just a football book, you know, the X's and O's. I think it's more about, the growing up in the 60s, what life was like then, and what my father was like, and people idolized him and admired him for what he was doing, and my father was one that always gave back into the community. I think that back then in that era, all those players gave back into the community. I don't know if that really happens today in professional football. Some guys maybe do. Peyton might do it, or somebody, Andrew Luck might do it. So I think guys like that, but I don't think overall football is the same as it was back then. You know, just obviously it's a big business now, a lot more money involved. And, of course, with social media and all the stuff that's going on now, they didn't have that back then. I'm sure they got trouble, but they just don't have it the way it is today.
You know, the focal point, obviously, is highlighting your dad's incredible career, but I thought it was great that you made a point just to share about your mother and how instrumental she was in his career. And I'd love for you to share some stories about in terms of, like, with contracts, and she really encouraged your father to move forward. Would you mind telling us a little bit about her?
Sure. My mother, Dorothy, was my father's high school sweetheart. We both went to St. Justin's mm-hmm. High School in Pittsburgh. My mom was the cheerleader, and mom was the rock that held us all together. She put my father in his place when my father was out of line. You know, my father, I think one of the stories in the book, we talk about my father, you know, went out to dinner with my mother one night with some friends, and there was a story of my mother was talking, and another story came up, and my father, you know, was going to say something, but he didn't know what to say because he didn't know anything about the particular topic. Well, my father really only read the newspaper. He only read the sports section and the, you know, the obituary section and maybe just a little bit of the comics. But he never read anything else about, you know, the world and local news and world news and stuff like that. My mom read the paper from front to cover, from front to back. So apparently that evening, there was a conversation going on, and my mother interjected and said something, and then of course next day my father said, well, why did you interrupt me? Why did you embarrass me like that? She says, John, I didn't embarrass you. She says, have you read the paper from front to back? You would have known more about current events other than the comics and football. But you basically put him in his place, and that's how she was. She was very strong. My mom was a mom that raised five children, and her job was to raise the children. And if my father, you know, obviously some of the wives traveled with the players. My mom really very rarely, if at all, traveled with my father when they went to away games. So my mom's job was at home with the children, and she was very instrumental. And unfortunately, she passed away 6 months prior to my father passing away. And then, of course, I got involved in my father's second wife, all the litigation and everything, which I cover in the book as well, too. That wasn't a very, very nice thing to do, but anyway.
Well, no, your mother, she was a very strong woman. I mean, thank goodness for her belief in him and persistence. But I want to share, I thought it was interesting, I mean, that your sister Janice, was when she was born, your mother almost died having her. And what was your grandmother? She came and swooped her from the hospital and took her home and got her back to 100%, right?
Yeah. My mom was a very strong woman. Mom's about 5'2", not very big, but she's just stocky. And her mom was even tinier, Mary Haley, and she was just as strong-willed as my mom. So, yeah, it was we had an interesting life.
Uh-huh.
Say the least, and it was fun. My sister and I were both born in Pittsburgh, and of course came to Baltimore when my father signed the contract, or should I say my mother signed my father's contract.
Right.
and it's just been a great ride. It really has been. And my siblings from my mom and I are very close, and unfortunately I don't talk very much about the second family at all because of what happened. So, and I cover that in the book, too. So,
John Unitas Jr. is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, and we have to take a quick commercial break. We will be rejoined, and we're going to talk some more about his new book that he's released, Johnny, You, and Me, right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. John Unitas Jr. is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We want to hear from you online. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports, and can you share a little bit about, in terms of, with Johnny Unitas, your father's relationship with Baltimore Colt coach, Weeb Eubank?
He was probably my father's favorite coach, in addition to Don McCafferty, who followed Don Shula after Don Shula left. my father wasn't a fan of Don Shula at all. Weeb was a great coach. He knew personnel. He assembled the Baltimore Colts 58-59 championship game team, and he did it by just believing in the guys that he had back there, and he let them do their jobs. You know, I don't think he called a single play, sent a single play in for my father. My father called all of his plays. And if he sent a play in, for example, Raymond Berry was in the huddle with my father, and one of the running backs runs in, calls a play, and it was for Raymond. And so my father calls the play, and Raymond is in the huddle during game and says, John, I'm not going to do that play. He says, we haven't practiced it. I haven't run it. We're not going to do it.
Uh-huh.
And my father said, fine, Raymond. That's the way it goes. We'll just call another one. That's what they did. And that's how those guys worked back then.
Wow.
Find that today.
Right.
You can't find that today.
But well,
that's how those guys worked. They worked very hard at their craft. And obviously it showed. They're both Hall of Famers. I think there was 9 Hall of Famers from the Baltimore Colts.
Well, before the arrival of Johnny Unitas with the Baltimore Colts, he was drafted, those early days, he was a 9th round draft choice for the 1955 Pittsburgh Steelers. And then he was cut before he even threw one pass. And then he started playing semi-pro football for, listen to this, $6 a game.
Three.
Oh, okay. $3. I stand corrected.
Yeah.
All right.
$3. Well, a lot of people have written $3, $6, $9, $12, $15. I think my father was the only one that got $15, and that was because they won the championship.
Wow.
That was big money back then.
So when did he get his chance? I mean, because he served as a backup, obviously, with the Baltimore Colts, and then he got his chance in the fourth game.
He got his chance. He got that phone call from Don Kellett to come down to Baltimore, and then he came down to Baltimore, and George Shaw was the quarterback at the time, was the first-round draft choice. George got hurt, and then they threw my father in there, and my father's first pass went for a touchdown, but the other way. That was his first thing with the J.C. Caroline. His first pass was the J.C. Caroline, and J.C. ran it back the other way. But other than that, and it didn't affect my father at all. I think Raymond writes about that in the prologue, or in his acknowledgement. It didn't faze my father at all. He just went right back out, did the same job, and took him down and scored some more touchdowns. And that's just the way my dad was. He didn't let things bother. My father was not a rah-rah, high-five guy either. You know, he actually did not like all that stuff. He said, you know, this is what you do for a living. This is what you do. You score a touchdown, you go back to the huddle, and that's it. Don't jump up and down and scream. So what? Who cares?
John, when you reflect over your father's career, what is, in your mind, the biggest moment for him? I'm thinking of that 1958 NFL title game.
Probably not. I think he probably would have said the San Francisco game in 1959, or it was the Los Angeles Rams, maybe, in 1959. when they won the championship. It was a game that they weren't even going to make it to the championship. And then I think there was a game in L.A. where they came back from a deficit of about 30-some points, and they had actually won that game to bring him into the championship. So I think he'd probably say something like that. Other than that, I think his biggest accomplishments would be his children. My father was not an emotional guy, but he was emotional about children and animals. So I never did see him get very upset about anything else but those two things. But I think that would be his biggest accomplishment. He loved his family. He loved his children. It's sad that he's not around to see him grow up the way they are now today.
And John, he loved his fans. Of course, you talk a lot about that. Of course,
the fans were, you know, if it wasn't for the fans, he wouldn't be who he is. He recognized that. And unfortunately, people don't recognize that today, in today's world. Sports has just gotten too darn big, you know, too much money. And I think what this book does is kind of reflects back on what it was back then in the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s. And then from, I think, the middle 70s on, it's just it's turned more of it into a big business. And Dad didn't like any of that.
Well, listen, John, congratulations on the book. We look forward to catching up with you. And again, the title of the book is Johnny, You and Me, The Man Behind the Golden Arm. And it is an awesome read. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful weekend, John.
Thanks, Alyssa. Appreciate your time. Thanks,
absolutely. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment. Yes, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, as we are inside the Quicken Loan Studios right here in Houston, Texas, and now being joined by one of our absolute favorites, and that is the Dallas Cowboy great Cliff Harris, who during his 10-year career participated in a total of 5 Super Bowls, including the Cowboys' very first world championship that win in Super Bowl VI. Good evening, Cliff. It's wonderful to have you with us.
Thank you, Alyssa. It's great to be back with you, visiting with you again.
Absolutely. Well, how about those Cowboys, that 26-10 win against the Titans last weekend? And in a moment, we're going to highlight and get a recap on that matchup and the story of the game. But right now, it has been such a special month of September for you personally. I mean, your alma mater honored you with a new football stadium. Wichita Baptist was named in your honor on September 13th, was the dedication of the Cliff Harris Stadium. And I just have to wonder, I mean, just share for our listeners across the country tonight, the dedication of the stadium. I mean, what was that like for you?
Yes, there were a lot of emotions. I had, you know, many of my Wichita teammates, some of my Dallas Cowboy teammates came up, my whole family. I spoke right before the team. The team was lined up behind me, the Wichita Tigers, and raring to go, waiting on my speech. I felt a little weird, but it was, you know, it's amazing. It's going to be a great thing, you know, as you... for the school in Wichita, for the athletic program there, and for the more recognition of what I'm trying to do, you know, with the Cliff Harris Award, bringing more attention to the small colleges across the United States that play really good quality football. You know, that's what it's all about.
Well, you know, the photos online and even the text message you'd sent me with some of the photographs, I mean, the stadium, Cliff, it is so impressive. And, you know, Wichita's head coach, Todd Knight, I mean, he's got to be fired up about these new facilities and just the new stadium. I mean, this is going to enhance, it's going to help out with recruiting and attracting some of the best student athletes.
Without any question, you know, it is something, I mean, as you drive into beautiful Arkadelphia, you know, Arkadelphia is a beautiful little town in Arkansas, about halfway between Little Rock and Texarkana in the mountains, the Wichita Mountains, and the Wichita River borders on the Wichita University. So, and as you drive over the hill and down into the valley, that is where you see where Wichita First is, and Henderson is a school right across the street at Henderson Methodist College. It used to be my mother and grandmother went there. But
wow.
Just as you drive in to the city of Arkadelphia, the Wichita Stadium, the new Wichita Stadium, the new Cliff Harris Stadium, is right there, very prominently as you drive in. So it's kind of like the, as I said in my little talk, the portal coming into Arkadelphia.
Well, the Cliff Harris Stadium, I mean, I'm sure that prompted a lot of reflections in you as a former athlete, and you're probably just thinking, you know, where has time gone? But I'm sure, you know, as we were saying, so many of the mixed emotions, I know that you would have loved to have had your parents there to watch this.
Right, exactly. And that's the way I start also. You were reading my mind as I started my little talk before at the dedication. You know, there were a lot of people there that supported me, my mom and dad. My grandparents were big supporters of my football program. I mean, football throughout my life. And, of course, Coach Buddy Bob Benson. And I'd love for Coach Landry to have been there.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. Coach Benson was my coach at Wichita mm-hmm. who taught me mental and physical toughness. And then, of course, Coach Landry, you know, his system allowed me to play and perform at high levels and play and start five different Super Bowls and win two of them. So it was it's quite an experience. It does bring you some thoughts of your own mortality and how long that stadium's going to be around, and that someday somebody's going to say, who was that Cliff Harris guy anyway?
Come on, we're never going to forget you.
Uh-huh.
Hey, now, Coach Benson, his wife did attend, correct?
Yes, I didn't actually see her, so I'm not 100% confident, but I'm hoping that she was there.
Dallas Cowboy great Cliff Harris is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, and we definitely wanted to take time to recognize that and send congratulations to you. But let's move ahead, because how about the big bounce back? A week two results for the Dallas Cowboys. They completely redeemed themselves with that win against the Titans. What were your takeaways? You got to love how physical they were up front. I mean, they really got after it.
They really did a really good job, and the running game, of course. I mean,
yes,
it's been rehashed over and over with DeMarco Murray. Did such a great job, and you know, Joseph Randall ran the ball real well, and I think Dunbar was in there some. But good gosh, running the ball is the way that we're going to win this year. I believe in establishing that running game. And I was very impressed. The defense played well, enough to win. And I'm hoping that the defense will gel and come together, and which it could, as ours did in a couple of our Super Bowls. We started with a bunch of young guys, and in the beginning, middle of my career in Super Bowl 10 and 12, young guys that they came around and started performing, and we ended up going to the Super Bowl and Super Bowl 10 and losing to the Steelers. But then the next year we went back to Super Bowl 12 and beat the Denver Broncos. So I'm hoping that this team will gel and something like that possibly happen.
Well, you know, when you talk about Dallas defensively, I mean, last year obviously was a disaster, but it seems like they really are better this year than we thought. What are some of the specific improvements that you've seen?
Well, they've been playing together, playing together a year, and I mean, anytime you see that, I mean, Barry Church back there and Morris Claiborne and Brandon Carr, they're getting used to playing with each other. We've got a bunch of new guys. I mean, we lost so many guys over last season.
Right.
But I think the linebackers move around this little. The Kyle Wilbur guy and Justin Durant, they're starting to step up and play. Last year didn't like the safeties playing so deep, and there were so many things open. Looks like they're reading the plays better, faster. The linebackers are moving well, and we're getting pressure on the quarterback, and that's going to be real key. I think the linebacking core is where we can see our most improvement, needed improvement, I think.
You're listening to the voice of Cliff Harris, Dallas Cowboy great, this evening at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Okay, so we've highlighted and touched on things defensively. It's also good to see Henry Melton getting back into the mix. But let me ask you this, Cliff. Are the Cowboys offensively, are they better when Tony Romo does less?
that's a tough question.
Come on.
The thing that we've seen with Romo is his ability to come back at the end of the game, and I think it's his ability to come back at the end of the game when one team is ahead and they are trying to run time off the clock, and he does a great job of coming in and getting close. You know, I don't know how many comeback times we've come back, the most points we've ever come back. I think records have been set and things like that. You know, with his back this year, it didn't look like to me that he had a lot of zip on the ball. I know that was something said by the commentators. I don't know if it's because he hasn't played in any preseason games and his timing's off, but it just looked like to me that the follow-through, the strength, the zip that it's going to take to get those passes completed, because I know from a personal experience that this game is just a matter of inches, and you lose a little bit, and that's you lose a little speed, and you miss knocking the ball away, and you're close, but you're not right on. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to have to see what it looks like in the next couple of games, what Romo looks like in the next couple of games, to see if he's physically ready. Mentally ready is another story, but actually to see if he's actually physically ready to play this year.
Well, perhaps Dallas has found a new identity offensively, and we've been visiting with the great Cliff Harris tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, and of course we definitely wanted to highlight the new Cliff Harris Stadium. Congratulations on that, and always a pleasure, and I hope to catch up with you soon in Dallas. Okay, Cliff?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Alyssa. I always enjoy visiting with you.
Absolutely.
I look forward to it again.
Thank you. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR. Okay, we are back in the huddle inside the Quicken Loans studios at YSR. And what in the world is going on in the Big Ten Conference as they have struggled mightily over the first 3 weeks of action? In fact, at this point, with only two undefeated teams in the Big Ten. And I am leaning towards Nebraska at this point as my favorite. So it is time now to welcome in Tom Pippins from Fox 6 in Milwaukee. We want to get his thoughts on the state of the Big Ten Conference and what team perhaps in the end will win the Big Ten Championship. Good evening, Tom.
Hey, it's great to be with you and the listeners as always, Big E. I hope things are well down there.
Oh, things are well. It's been a very rainy week here in Houston, and we do want to take a look at the Big Ten standings. The results are very disappointing, and you look at just even the upsets. I mean, like Indiana was upset by Bowling Green, Iowa upset by Iowa State, and then, of course, Maryland. They lose at home to West Virginia. So, first and foremost, I mean, what was your forecast coming into this season? I mean, because expectations have really plummeted at this point.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say the Big Ten, this is not necessarily the best time. It's competitive, but there's almost a competitive in the sense that it's mediocrity. You know, I believe everybody, Big E, thought that Ohio State was going to be an elite team and certainly cut above anyone else in the conference, and then they lose Braxton Miller. And as you know, that's such a key position, and he's such a key player for them, that I think that brought them down a little bit. And Wisconsin is going through a quarterback situation of their own, kind of a bizarre situation where they had LSU on the ropes. They lost a couple of people on the D-line during that game, blew a big lead, and the quarterback that they had was a converted safety who had originally played as the signal caller. Tanner McAvoy was just horrible in that game. Now, he was better against Western Illinois, but with all due respect, these are the Leathernecks. They've had some injuries. It seemed as if they were covering for Joel Stavi. They said he had an arm issue. He had hurt his shoulder last year. And then it comes out that if it's like a ball player, a pitcher who can't get it over the plate anymore, mm-hmm. second baseman who can't make the throw to first. It's a mental thing with Joel, who's a great kid, a local kid. But he was the guy, I think, and everyone kept saying, why isn't Stavi in the game when they had the Tigers on the ropes? And McAvoy was throwing picks, and he was horrible in terms of his completion percentage. First time out against a tough team, understood. So it was, and then they had to kind of backtrack, and then Joel spoke. So, and Melvin Gordon had a hit pointer. He had a big game. He had a long run. They took him out. How come he wasn't back in? They said they were trying to protect his hip. He seemed a little disappointed he wasn't back in there. So, wow. We had a lot of drama early on. And this is from a Wisconsin team that I thought had a good shot to win the conference. I kind of come to where you are. I think the Huskers look good. Everyone thought Michigan Michigan State would be a team. It's early in the season, as we know. I mean, the Badgers have already had a bye, and they play that same Bowling Green team, that is, and they put that ball up, I think, 73 times last week.
Crazy.
So that should be an aerial show at Camp Randall Stadium in Madtown, Wisconsin. But I'm with you. I think it's not the best time for the Big Ten. It should be competitive. But in the end, I don't see a team that separates itself and gets a long run or has a chance to contend for the national championship under this new playoff format.
Okay, so in the Big Ten, the East Division, Penn State, they have an unblemished record. They're 3-0. The West Division, Nebraska, 3-0. But the traditional powers within this conference
right.
have struggled. That's what I'm talking about. You know, Ohio State, Michigan, I mean, that game against Notre Dame, I still haven't gotten over that.
Yeah, I know the Irish have, you know, they're looking pretty good, but I think that they could be in trouble over there because it just, I don't know what has happened, but it just hasn't worked out for Michigan, and there's going to be a short leash there. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if they make a coaching change at some point unless they rebound. It has been very, I mean, it used to be Michigan, Ohio State. Those were the teams everybody saw
right,
on national
right, yeah.
television coming down on the wire.
Mm-hmm.
And as you point out, it's like, well, what's going on? You know, it's like watching the current day Seattle Seahawks, and if they were 0-6, this is crazy. This is not supposed to happen. You know, what's going on in the world? But right now, it's just a period. It's ebb and flow. And certainly at their best, I don't think that the Big Ten is going to play with the folks in the Southeastern Conference, for example, toe-to-toe. Although, once again, the Badgers had LSU now ranked, I think, in the top 10, eighth, if I remember correctly. And they had them. So they're a pretty good team. And I think under Gary Anderson, and we obviously have a bent here in Wisconsin, I think they'll do a good job. And I think that they'll grow and they'll be there most every season contending for a Big Ten crown. But as you point out, it's unusual. And it just isn't a lot of fun, you know, because you don't have the great teams there right now.
Tom Pippins from Fox 6 Television in Milwaukee is joining us tonight at YSR, the Big East Sports Show, the fastest 2 hours in radio. And obviously, I like to look at the positives. And Michigan State, I mean, that's a program that's on a rise. And Mark D'Antonio, as a head coach, I think he's done a fabulous job.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. I think as long as he's at Michigan State, the Spartans will be, if not an elite team, and they will be on certain years, they're going to be really good. And so once again, as we talk now, Big E, on your show with the listeners, it's early in the campaign. We'll see what happens. You have a surprise here or there, but it is a little bit disappointing. It just doesn't have the same feel. The juices aren't flowing yet, but we'll see in another month. Somebody might get on a roll and then perhaps try to get themselves in the equation a little bit for that playoff thing. But I don't see it happening this season, that's for certain.
Well, of course, there in Milwaukee, I mean, one of the teams you cover very, very closely is Wisconsin, as you were talking about, a tough start to the season. But what is your belief in the Badgers and a reason to believe in Gary Anderson's team? I mean, let's not forget they were 9-4 last year.
Right, and they had a good start. They had a disappointing end of the season, the loss to Penn State. That cost them a bigger bowl game, and then they played South Carolina tough, but they eventually lost to Steve Spurrier's squad. Once again, I'm a big believer in the coach. I think he's starting to get his people in just barely, if you will. You know, the cupboard in terms of Gary Anderson recruits is still filling up. And he has a young team, too. They lost a lot of key performers, and they're still looking for a go-to receiver. So there are a lot of things that are not working in their favor. The defense is young. As long as they have Melvin Gordon, I think they're going to be very good. He and Corey Clement, another outstanding running back, a terrific 1-2 punch. But what happened was, and Western Illinois did this, Big E, in the first half a couple of Saturdays ago, they just stacked the box and dared Tanner McAvoy to throw. Now, eventually, after an erratic start, including an interception, he went on to complete 17 straight, and that opened things up. So I think that's going to be the key. Tanner McAvoy, who again was playing safety, a 6'6 safety.
Wow.
That's how athletic he is. He came from a junior college and Arizona Western, I think it was, and you know, he hadn't had reps. He started to play, and then they converted him after he broke his hand last year. So it's going to take some time, and particularly unless Joel Stavi, who's a better thrower, McAvoy's in there because he's more athletic and he runs well, but I think a lot of it is what's up in Joel's head. And if he gets that straightened out, I just like the way he throws the deep ball. He came in last year against South Carolina and threw a terrific pass that might have been caught for a touchdown. But he'd had some injury. He'd come back from that. I think they gave him a couple of plays. But I think in McAvoy, you're going to see someone who will grow on the job, and he has to. I think the more successful he is, the more successful Melvin Gordon will be, and he's a Heisman Trophy preseason candidate who has not had a very good start by his standards. He had a good game against the Tigers. He broke off, as I mentioned earlier, a real long run, but he did not do very well, in fairness to him, because they just loaded up the box. He didn't get as many chances, though he did catch a touchdown pass. So it's a team that I think will grow. It'll take some time. They won't be an elite team. I would assume they will be a bowl team, but I predict they'll lose a couple more and probably end up with three losses.
You know, as I listen to you speak, Tom, I mean, it sounds like you have a lot of confidence in Tanner. I mean, his development as a quarterback, I mean, obviously he had that superb performance against Western Illinois, but, I mean, he's shown us some signs, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. And anytime you can, and I think Gary likes the more mobile quarterback. We haven't had that at Wisconsin in a long time. He's recruited a kid who I think has still another year of high school, recruited him as a sophomore, had a connection with his dad through days gone by. And I really think he wants to build that program up to, you know, the option. He did a lot of that when he was so successful in his last stint. And I think that with Utah State, and I think that what you're going to find is with him, as he has more time to bring his people in, it's going to be a Gary Anderson type offense. That doesn't mean in Wisconsin you're ever going to stop running the football. I mean, you get those big, strong farm boys, and you know, they're going to mash some people and they're going to run it down your throat. But I think he wants to bring a little bit more versatility to the offense, something that, you know, would Barry Alvarez and Brett Bielema was more bread and butter, and obviously it was very successful. But I think Anderson wants to bring a little bit more to the table, and I think that that's going to be a good thing down the stretch. So in McAvoy, yes, I have my concerns. I'd like to think that he started to warm up and gain some confidence. Been a long time for him. You know, he's rusty as a quarterback. But we will certainly see as the Big Ten opens how effective he can be. And the more effective he is, obviously, the better it is for 25 back there, talking about Melvin Gordon out of Kenosha Bradford High School in Wisconsin.
Very well said. Tom Pippins has been with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. We are flat out of time.
Always a pleasure to be with you and the listeners. Very best. God bless.
That, of course, was Tom Pippins from Fox 6 Television out of Milwaukee. A very special thank you to all of our guests. Our lineup tonight, Jason Peter with our Under the Helmet segment, Cliff Harris, Dallas Cowboy great, and John Unitas Jr., the son of Johnny Unitas, and Steve Bortstein from Fox Sports New Mexico. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell, reminding you to not drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports right here at Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, like, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.